Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Not So Nice Girl. And today I have another amazing guest, Marissa Sperry. She's one of my good friends from college. We did cheer together, and now we're out and living in the adult world, for better or for worse. And today we're going to talk kind of a little bit, a major aspect of the adult world, and that's your work life. Like I mentioned in the first episode, that's such a big portion of kind of discovering your voice and standing up for yourself. And Marissa and I have pretty similar experiences where we were in probably not a great work environment and had to make that very tough decision to leave. So with that, I am going to turn it over to Marissa to share with her, with you all, her experiences.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here with you, Nat.
Yay, I
thank
know.
You so much for asking me. Yeah, so basically my background in work is just, I started this, what was soon to become a very toxic job in October of 2020. So, you know, it's like at the height of the pandemic, I had just left my, you know, first job right out of college that I was super excited about, but it kind of turned into something that I wasn't really like looking for anymore. And so I found this job that one of my friends was actually working for, the same company, and referred me to work for this place. And was like, yeah, this place is great. Like, it's still environmental consulting. You're still in your field, but it's a lot more, like femme, and there are a lot of women, or, you know, female identifying people. And yeah, it's just like a way better vibe than like most other consulting companies, because, you know, the consulting field, especially environmental and like urban planning, civil engineering, they're very male dominated, which is kind of what I was finding, you know, in my first job. It just didn't seem like a great fit for, you know, a younger female starting out right out of college to like build up skills and stuff. So I was looking for something that was a more, you know, supportive environment for, you know, me. And I was like, wow, this company, it's like ran by the girlies. And like, that's what I'm looking for. So I take the job. And, you know, the first like year really seemed great. Like, you know, I'm climbing the rungs. I'm feeling good. I'm learning a lot. I'm getting brought onto a ton of projects. I'm really like flourishing and like honing in on my skills. And I feel like the higher I got and the closer I got with my managers, the more I started to realize kind of like the cracks in the foundation. And you know, I sat with that for a while, and, you know, maybe like 6 or 8 months of that where I was like kind of seeing like some red flags, but I wasn't really like concerned about them to the point of, you know, feeling like I needed to jump ship, because, you know, every kind of company has their flaws. So it wasn't really a thing for me that, you know, seemed worth leaving over.
And when you say kind of these cracks in the foundation, you're talking about maybe kind of this image that you were originally sold on, or
yeah, totally
how they interacted with you.
Yeah, I'm hearing one thing, I'm experiencing another. You know, people are wanting me to, you know, provide feedback, do XYZ additional tasking. You know, and I'm willing to do it for the most part. And, you know, it was kind of in that asking me to do more and me doing it transaction that kind of led down like the slippery slope. But yeah, I like kind of moved my way up and, you know, had, I thought, a pretty good reputation at the company. And, you know, things kind of started coming to a head when I started experiencing issues, and I began advocating for myself and, you know, speaking up, which what I thought was, you know, welcomed. You know, I was, you know, we would have on all company meetings, and, you know, the number one priority is like company culture. We want everyone to feel included and blah, blah, blah. And I was not feeling that way. And they really wanted people to provide feedback, seemingly. And so, you know, I would give the feedback that I felt was warranted. And they'd be like, okay, yeah, we'll work on that. And that's kind of how it was for, you know, the first 6 months of, you know, after I initially started providing the feedback. And it was almost like the more feedback I provided, the more I was retaliated against, the more I was ridiculed, the more people didn't want to work with me. And so, you know, that went on for several months before ultimately I found out several things that had been going on behind the scenes that were not brought to my attention. I'm someone who really loves to get feedback, and I feel like in a professional setting, I have thick skin and, you know, I'm able to receive feedback without feeling really shitty about myself, which is, you know, hard, I think, for a lot of people. Yeah. It's hard for a lot of people. And I don't know like where that comes from. I just feel like, you know, it kind of rolls off me. It doesn't really bother me in a personal way. I think I'm able to like separate the two things, like personal attacks versus, you know, professional criticism. And the table started to turn in a way that it kind of did start to become
the line started attacks. To blur.
Yeah. And, you know, I was called unprofessional and I was called, you know, too outspoken. People were embarrassed to work with me on projects because they were fearful of how I would act in front of a client, which I'm sorry, but that's terrible to hear. Like, that's a terrible thing to hear.
Especially knowing that the root of where it's coming from is you advocating and speaking up within the company, and they're taking it so far beyond that. And I think we both experienced that in our jobs where we were just the ones that were most able to and equipped to speak up about bad things going on. And so we're talking out for not just us, but multiple other people that we're working with.
Yeah.
At a company that they, you know, will hold, like at least for my company, they would hold like Q&As and they would, you know, ask people to speak and send in feedback, and then you send it in and they immediately are like, well, no.
Don't say that. But don't say that.
But give us feedback, but only if it is good. And you're like, that's not
really how feedback works, girly. I am, you know, more outspoken and I am more extroverted. And I feel like in a professional setting, especially if you're giving feedback, I don't feel like it should matter what your title is. I feel that anybody should be able to provide feedback to anybody, because that is what creates a cohesive working environment. It's not about, oh, well, they're the president of the company, so I can't say something to them because I'm just an associate. Like, that's bullshit. I don't agree with that at all. And I think that people get very wrapped up in what their title is and they feel very insecure about what things they're able to speak up about. I think that's bad in general. And I know that I'm not the only one that has experienced it. I know you've experienced it. And I also know several of, you know, my friends that have nothing to do with my field that I know have, you know, they've shared this experience with me that they've provided feedback and they think that it's why they got fired from their job. You know, like that is simply horrible, you know, to be in a position to, you know, potentially lose your financial stability, your have a gap on your resume that future employers might be like, well, why the hell is that on there? You know what I mean? Like, it kind of does, in a way, put like a weird target on you in multiple situations.
Especially when none of it is based off of your actual performance.
Right.
And it's not even really how you are working in a team working field, because, you know, you can still work, you're still good in teamwork. It's just when there are issues that arise, you need someone to come up and say something, or, you know, maybe someone goes to you and asks if you can say something, and you're just the one most equipped to do that.
Yeah. And so that is another thing that I noticed while working at the company was, you know, I was amongst a lot of introverted people. And so I think that perhaps that played into the facade that I was like this angry, like cynical, like person that wanted to like take down the company from the inside or something like that. I don't really know like what the vibe was that people were getting, but.
And I think that's a common thing that we are always fighting back and forth with, especially as women, and especially with companies that are trying to be woke and trying to say the things that are correct. So, you know, they're telling you, we want to hear your feedback, or they're telling you, we want to hear from the lowest levels, and they don't actually want to. And when it does, like when push comes to shove, that's not, you're a nuisance to them and you're just speaking. And especially when I worked in data science and clinical trials. So yeah, a lot of the people that I worked with were pretty introverted. I mean, I remember in my literal interview, I don't know how I even got the job, because in my interview, I asked the person, I said, so what's the, you know, culture, what's the environment? And this is after me rambling about who knows what. And she just goes, well, my preference are people that don't talk as much. And I was like,
oh my God.
I said, great, that's awesome. Thank you. Bye. See you later. And so that was kind of the culture. Is people were very like, they did their own thing, not as collaborative. And they would say that they wanted to be more collaborative, or say that they wanted to hear more from you. And then you do it. Or you are more outgoing, are more outspoken, and then they judge you for it. Like I would get judged by either they would think I was unprofessional because I was young, because I would talk out, because I was happy. It would be like, oh, she's stupid. And it's like, no, I don't need to be, I can be very professional and I can be very equipped in my job and still
have a social life,
be social with my coworkers, and then also be open and honest about what I'm experiencing. And for me, I know, like you were saying, you were rising in the ranks. For me, they just wouldn't promote me, and it was just constant lies of like one thing after another of, you know, it was this, it was that, and it was, and none of them were true, and it was 18 different people saying different things and not at all what was happening. And I would accept roles that were way higher than I was being paid for, because they knew I could do it, because I should have been promoted to that level. But
yeah,
that's not what was happening on my salary. And
it's like, have you heard about this like shadow banning that's like taking place on TikTok or like whatever? It's like, your videos are like very popular, but they're not getting like sucked up into the algorithm and like spit out for a bunch of different people. So you're kind of like losing traction. This has happened to a lot of like online creators or whatever.
Really?
We were getting shadow banned, Natalie. We were doing the work. We were getting the recognition behind the scenes, but we were not getting the outward like praise and like the things that we.
Oh my gosh, that is it.
We were not getting the fruits of our labor. Which that's very messed up.
Yes. And I think that's something too, just to kind of chime in here. So I did a lot of research in my schooling about generational differences in the workplace. And that's kind of where I jumped off this conversation with Marissa when we were talking back and forth. Generations are skewed, and generational research is a vague term, because what is a generation? I mean, we'll fight all the time of where the line between Gen Z and millennials lands, but you'll notice kind of there's this big shift, and it's with this millennial group and these like perimillennials, so that transitional Gen Z to millennial age group. And a lot of it is that millennials were really one of the first generations to get such a bad rep, because there was the internet coming and everything, and people could be very open and widespread about basically shitting on them.
Yeah.
And all of that was rooted in the workforce. And it was the millennials saying, we're all going, like, we're going to college or we're getting educated and we're all working hard in some way or another. And then there's just not enough jobs that meet our level of competence. And so there was so much underemployment among millennials because they had to just accept lower jobs. And they were frustrated because they were going into a job knowing that they were way overqualified and they're not getting compensated equivalent to what their actual skill was. And all the older generations, we were talking about, it's almost that frat mentality where they were like, well, we had to do it, so you have to do it. And we're kind of sitting there being like, well, why? And yeah. What's funny is, like, we'll accept an answer, even a total bullshit answer to that question. And Gen Z is now coming in and they won't. They honestly, the trends are that they're not going to accept an answer to that unless it's like logical. Whereas when we said why, they were like, well, because, and we'll be like, okay. And Gen Z is not going to do that.
Maybe the more Gen Z that I'd like to admit, because I need someone to tell me straight up what is going on. I am sick and tired of like this like fluffy, like, oh, we don't want to hurt your feelings, so we're going to tell you like a lie kind of type of mentality. Like, I would rather you say like, no, everybody hates your guts, like you should just leave, versus be like, oh yeah, well maybe next time you'll get a promotion, or like maybe next time you'll get pulled onto that job. Like, don't get my hopes up. Like, I could have been looking for a job a year ago had I known that you guys just didn't want to help me out in this situation. Yeah.
And I was in a pretty unique position, and I knew that I was going to go back to school. So I knew I was just, it was going to be a temporary thing. And even when I joined, I told them that I would still want to work part-time while I was in school, or I would want to get my PhD and come back to work for them. No, not anymore. But I even said that. So there was no reason that they shouldn't invest in me, especially if I was going to get a PhD and then come back. Like, no reason they shouldn't invest in me. And they would string me along, I mean, just enough to where it just didn't make sense for me to leave. And they
knew. That's exactly how I was feeling.
Yeah, it was. And I think that's kind of a common theme among, there's this, again, with some of the research, is the managers to the employee roles and these generational differences and these shifts in these companies, they're not matching up. So we are coming from a generation of communication and open communication, and that's what we get. And we understand open communication, and we're being so much more open about everything. Like, that's just what happens with, you know, when you come into this digital world, everything becomes transparent.
Yeah.
And the older generations are much more euphemistic.
Under wraps. Yes.
Yeah.
Everything is like a top secret emergency.
Like, yeah. I mean, it's like you're working in any freaking government. And
I know.
It's like a top
secret. I kind of was low key, but like, it wasn't. My company was like a private. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, for the government. But I was like, girlies, like, we don't need to do this. Like, it's not that deep, you know, like, just let me know if you're going to give me more money or not.
it doesn't like, have to be a game.
Yeah, exactly. I know.
Yeah. So there was always like kind of that tension of, sorry.
No, you're good.
Of where we go into these roles looking for communication and expecting it because that's what we've always gotten. Right. And then we're not receiving that. And there's just kind of like, you start butting heads because you don't understand. It's the same thing of like, you know, they'll wait. And we talked about this. They'll wait until like the annual review to tell you, this isn't why you're getting your promotion. And you're like, that thing happened a year ago.
Yeah.
And we're so used to instant response, for better or for worse.
Right.
But it just isn't translating in our relationship with our managers. And that's all, that's one of the big reasons for dissatisfaction and for high turnover rates among our generation, is this disconnect on open communication.
Yeah, it's really terrible. And one of my, you know, I was trying to be as transparent as possible with them in my thinking. But I was advised not to do that, you know, from, you know, some of my colleagues, because I shouldn't have shown them all my cards, or like, I shouldn't have told them that I was dissatisfied because maybe they would let me go before I was ready, or like, you know, whatever. Which honestly, it got to a point for me that I was like, I hope they fire me, because at least then I'm able to file for unemployment. You know, at least then I'll be able to continue having benefits. I won't be left without health care. Like, it got so bad for me that I was like,
you're already mentally over it.
You right. Well. I was like softening the blow in any way that I could. And ultimately the backlash that I was receiving was mostly from my female colleagues. It was mostly from my female bosses, or, you know, people who I thought when joining the company were going to be there as like a positive role in my life, and we're going to be, you know, like lifting me up and empowering me as like another woman to like, you know, do this corporate thing. Like, let's do it. You know, like, let's go, girls. Like the Shania Twain song.
Yeah.
I was like, let's do this. Like, this is a very female dominated company. It was like 80% female. And we were in, you know, like I said, in a very male industry. And so I was very ready to like, just, I don't know, get shit done. And it just wound up being that the thing that I thought was going to be so great for me is the thing that actually wound up biting me in the ass. So, yeah.
That's something we talked about too, was I worked in, again, clinical trials, but I worked with a lot of academics. And I found that the ones that would treat me the worst were the women and the higher powered women. And it was almost like there was a very real ageism that would come from it. And because they had to work so hard to get where they are, and that's so incredible and so impressive, that they feel that they need to make it harder for us.
Yeah.
And that we have to earn it just the way they did, which the whole purpose, and at least my idea from it, of like, when I eventually become a doctor, you know, when you eventually become like a leader in your field, my idea is that I want to open it more for those people, make them not have to fight as hard as I did, to make it happen faster. And that's just not at all what I experienced in my job. I mean, I told you, but one of the professors, and these were like very prestigious schools, very prestigious professors, terrifyingly speak on a lot of other podcasts, very, very popular podcasts. And they would openly hush me or mute me on calls when I'm giving a training for no real reason other than I was explaining to, I mean, it would be 200 research assistants that I'd be explaining to. And I would be explaining just, you know, the monotone red tape that you have to go through to running a clinical trial. And they didn't like it. So they would hush me. They would mute me. They would call me an idiot in front of everyone because I would just be saying what we need to do, basically. And again, this is coming from women.
Right.
like women hushing you. And you're like,
yeah,
but I looked up to you. And it's almost like a bubble popped because you're like, you are who I wanted to be. And now you're just so awful to me.
Right. Yeah, I completely agree with you. And, you know, that's kind of the reality of the corporate world right now. I think that we're kind of going through like a shift in, you know, what spaces women are like allowed to be in. I know that sounds crazy to say because it's 2023 and like women have been in, you know, women have been working for a long time, you know, but like, I still feel that there is kind of this weird, like unspoken thing about like how women should act in the workplace, like how we should respond to, you know, critiques from superiors. And it's almost like you are a woman, but you're upholding this like misogynistic, like corporate America that we should be releasing. And I completely agree with you on the point of, you know, I want to make it easier for the next generation. I want to make it more accessible for women that are younger than me that are coming into the field. You know, because I know how hard it is. I want to be the person that provides the tools so that other people can succeed. And I don't understand how other people don't have the same mindset. It's been so hard to, you know, really confront that head on. Like, not everybody wants everybody to succeed.
Especially, I think, because we grew up in that kind of revolution area. And like, I watched my mom was a CFO, like my mom was such a badass. And, you know, not without strife, but my mom always kind of like me and my sister, it was like, there's no excuses. Like you got to push for what you want. And we watched our moms do that. And, or like we watched, you know, other people, very important female roles do that in our life. So we thought it would be more commonplace, and then it just a huge bubble pops and you get discouraged. Like I was like, do I even want to work in academia anymore if I'm going to be treated like this? But fortunately, what research shows is once they retire, it's usually, and I will say like, now I have a female mentor and she is like a godsend, and there are the diamonds in the rough, but yeah, it was a huge bubble just burst for me.
Right. And I can completely resonate with your, you know, anecdote about your mom. Like my mom, you know, she's a single mom. She raised me and my sister on her own. And like, she was a boss, like at her job. And like, she was, you know, she was a national project manager for AT&T. Like she was the shit. And like, I feel like growing up, seeing her doing her thing really like empowered me to be like, okay, like, you know, I want to be successful in my job and like, I need to advocate for myself. And like, I can remember even at a young age being very drawn to like working, like being part of like the industry or, you know, whatever industry it may be, but just like being part of like a corporation that I could make a difference in. Like,
yeah,
I feel like that was always instilled in me. And my mom always really wanted us to be like outspoken about our needs. And that was always something that was apparent in my household. So carrying that over to the workplace feels very natural to me. And I think, you know, ultimately that's probably why I have a thick skin when it comes to like receiving feedback and stuff, is because I'm not scared to give feedback. Like, I think that that kind of feeds into like the supportive community. And I don't know. I'm a big proponent of that. And
yeah.
Shout out to strong moms. You know what I mean?
I know.
Let's go.
Hell yeah. No, I mean, and that's why like it ends up being kind of this lose-lose situation, because I was just taught to be strong and independent. And I swear I made like a lemonade stands were the biggest deal. And
yes,
I would sell like baked goods, and I made a little like catering company, like, cause that's what my mom and my dad, but like my mom especially, showed me to do. That's
right.
That's what I saw growing up. And then you go in and you're like, my voice matters. What I have to say is important. And they're like, no, wrong. And you're like, okay, well, where do I win in this situation?
Right.
Because I am getting hurt and I see other people getting hurt. And if I don't say anything, nothing changes. If I do say anything, maybe something will change.
Yeah. That's kind of what my breaking point was, is like, yeah. I can't continue to feel this way and I need to do something about it. And I didn't really have a clear cut path on, you know, what would be successful, what would be a successful way to do that. And so providing the feedback was really the only way that I knew how, you know, talking to people, having one-on-ones with literally the president of the company and like telling her, I'm not doing great. And I know that other people are not doing great either, because we've had, you know, over 10 people quit in the last 4 months. Like, obviously things are not going well. And yeah, the fact that you are blatantly disregarding those data points are kind of blasphemous. I literally got on a call with HR at one point and I was, you know, explaining my concerns and telling them that, you know, I found it really alarming that so many people were quitting, and they were like, oh no, that's just part of the, I can't remember what the phrase was, but it's like, there was like a time during like the pandemic where people that were like in the 2 to 4 years out of college were just like quitting their job, the mass resignation or the great resignation is what they were calling it. And I'm like, no, like, you can call it that, I guess, but also, in the reality of, you know, our company, we only have, you know, like 55 people and 10 of them just left. So,
well, and just like, to chime in real quick, that was something that I found in the research, was if you look at older papers, they say millennials, you know, they usually stay at a job for 1 to 2 years and then they switch to a new job. And originally, the way that it was always being talked about was they have no loyalty.
Right.
They have no loyalty to companies. They have no work ethic. They joined the workforce and then it was harder than they realized. Like, that's how it was always being portrayed. And then someone kind of flipped the switch and was like, why are we not researching where their mental state is at when they're leaving? Right. And when they did do that, they were seeing high frustration, high, like extremely low work and job satisfaction, like just these extreme numbers. And this was pre-COVID, like the COVID wasn't even a factor. And yeah, when you finally look at that, you're like, okay, why are we kind of shoving this under the rug?
Yeah.
And I remember for me, when I did my like closeout meeting, they said they usually, it was a private company, and they said, they were like, typically we get 1 to 2 people who quit every couple of weeks from a company. And this company was having like 5 a week. And they knew, and they knew what project I was on too. They could call all of these things out because they were like, yeah, there's a serious issue. And we keep raising these alarm bells and no one's listening.
That was me.
Because on the forefront, like, we were getting a lot of work done and getting a lot of work and winning a lot of contracts, but at what cost?
Right. Yeah. And so, as you can imagine, me going to HR was kind of like a last ditch effort to be like, the fire's coming from inside the house. Like, we need to do something about this or you're going to lose everybody. And then I just basically got gaslit. And I was like, amazing. Oh. Yeah, I was like, oh, okay, so you guys don't think this is a problem, but everybody that's working here thinks it is. Like, that's kind of crazy. But I guess you're HR, so we just have to listen to you. So yeah, I don't know. All of that, there were a lot of other things, and, you know, I could sit here for hours talking about it, but ultimately, it got to a point where I just was depressed for like the first time in, you know, probably 3 years. I had gotten my mental health under control, if you can imagine. I was feeling pretty stable prior to all of this happening. And then, you know, I started exhibiting signs of like, you know, going back into my depressive state. And like, I felt, you know, I was doing like a lot of the same behaviors that I was doing when I, you know, was very depressed several years ago. And I was like, checking in with myself, maybe I need to change something.
But shout out to you, because that alone is so hard to do. Just like,
yeah,
acknowledging that old habits are coming back.
Yeah.
That you never want to believe it.
That was definitely very eye-opening. And, you know, I live with my partner, and like, it was very apparent to him that things were shifting in me. And like, you know, I was acting like a person that I did not want to be acting like. And so it took a lot. I, you know, initially my plan was to have a job prior to quitting, but you know, I applied for jobs for several months before I left, and you know, no callbacks, no interviews, nothing. And ultimately it came to a head, and I decided being unemployed and not having financial stability is better than feeling the way that I'm feeling every single day. And I have to go. Like, there's no real way around it at this point. I can't avoid it or wish it away any longer. Yeah. Like, I have to do
something. No, I mean, it pushed you to your breaking point.
Yeah. And so yeah, I quit on February 3rd. And then because it was so bad, I was forced to sign an NDA. So non-disclosure agreement was signed. I wasn't able to file for unemployment, even though I was in an abusive, you know, I was being put in an abusive situation at my company, which I don't know how familiar you are with like unemployment benefits, but, generally if you are experiencing any sort of emotional, distress or, you know, any sort of like discomfort or your health is at risk at your job, and you ultimately resign, you are allowed to receive unemployment benefits because of that. But I was in the situation that I was in was so bad. And I think that they probably were aware of what I could have done had I not signed an NDA. They typed up a contract to have me basically like keep my mouth shut, and they paid me a severance, which was nice. It was for 6 weeks, and I did have, you know, a normal income for the first 6 weeks of my unemployment, which was nice. But it got to a point where like, I was having physical symptoms. Like, I had a stress rash all over my face, all over my body. Actually, I want to show you a photo of it because it's been exactly 6 months since I took this photo, and you're going to freak out. It was really bad. I mean, I was experiencing like, you know, weird like hair loss, the stress rash.
Yeah. For those listening too, I mean, it looks like hives, honestly.
Yeah, it was all over my face. I mean, it was very bad, and I was like embarrassed to leave my house about it. Like, I, yeah. You know what I mean? I had rid myself of the situation that I was in, and yet, you know, my face was still showing all the things that I had been going through. So it was like kind of this weird period after I finally resigned that, you know, I went through a period of shame and guilt, because, you know, I didn't want to be viewed as someone who was like lazy, like you were saying, like,
yeah.
Oh, well, people who quit are just lazy, or everybody leaves like after 2 years or whatever. You know what I mean? It's like, that's so millennial or whatever. Yeah. But like, I didn't want that to be the case. And I view myself as somebody who is hardworking and someone who is willing to put in the work to you know, make a situation better. And I feel like I had done everything that I could at that point to, you know, make the situation better for me and others. And it was just kind of backfiring at me on all angles. So there wasn't really anything else for me to do besides resign. And it caused a lot of shame. I hate to admit that, you know, I hate to admit that, you know, leaving an abusive relationship made me feel sad for myself.
No, I mean, that's the most common feeling that people report when they leave.
Yeah.
Because there's shame that you get from your, like, how did I let myself stay there?
Yeah.
But then also shame and regret where you're like, maybe I'm overreacting because you just had years of months or whatever of being gaslit, of being told you are too much. You are too outspoken. This is your fault. This is your fault. This is your fault, that you start believing it. So that when you leave, you're like, well, am I overreacting? And it's that constant. And same with the rash too. Like, I always tell my friends and my partner too, when crazy things happen for me, I feel like I'm your go-to person if you're in chaos, because I or in a crisis, like, I am just business. Here's the line, follow it. And it's the second that you leave, or the second that you like step out of the eye of the storm, that I feel like that's when I crumble. And like, that's when I really break. And then it induces all these other emotions, because you're like, okay, well, I left, I should be feeling better now.
Yeah.
And I'm not. But you're forgetting that, like, there's years of abuse that are weighing down on you.
Yeah.
That you never actually were allowing yourself to process before.
Exactly. And I was trying to stay very strong, and I was trying to stay very professional for a really long time, and just, you know, put off the facade of like, this isn't bothering me. Like, you're not going to be able to break me down this easily. I'm going to keep showing up to work. I'm still going to keep doing my work, and I'm going to prove you wrong. That was my mindset. I'm going to prove you wrong. I'm going to make you think that what your view is of me is not true. And that's simply not possible. Like,
and that's what I was always told too, or I was told, you know, especially because, so I was planning on continuing to work at least up until I started school, and I ended up quitting 3 or 4 months early. And I mean, thank goodness I was able to, and it you know, I would be financially okay, but I have a paper trail of abuse at this point.
Right.
And there's no way I can't go into this. I mean, I wasn't even going in person, thank God.
But, no, same.
But like, when a Teams message pings, literally scares the living shit out of you.
Oh my God, yes.
That when you start having a visceral reaction to a Teams ping, that's when you're like, there is literally nothing I can do anymore to make you okay with me, or to reestablish myself in this company. There's just nothing I can do, because at this point, and we were talking about this, like, reminding yourself that at some point it's not about you anymore. There's something else happening and you just have to leave. Like,
right.
And that was such a thing that like you feel like, I mean, you are technically quitting. So, and that word was like so taboo to us. So you feel like such a loser, because you're like, I quit. Like, I gave up. You know, I should have kept fighting. But there wasn't a fight happening anymore. Like, it wasn't mutual. It was you trying so hard and them not budging. So like, at some point, leaving and stepping away is the only thing you can do and the only noble thing you can do. And recognizing that takes months and months. So I would love to hear, like, we know you were pushed to the brink. Fuck them. Respectfully,
Respectfully? I mean, honestly, kind of disrespectfully.
A little bit disrespectfully.
A little bit, but yeah.
And now you February 3rd, now you're here.
Somehow.
We made it. We kept moving.
I know.
You also, in the meantime, were starting some passion projects on the side.
I did a lot.
You rebuilt.
Well.
Because in a way, this is like leaving an abusive relationship. How did you rebuild yourself?
That is really how it felt. And like, it feels so silly kind of in a way to be like, yeah, I got bullied at my job. Like, I don't know. And
but it's real. Really, and I think a lot of people can relate to this.
Totally. Yeah. And that's why I feel good about like talking about it. And I feel like I have wanted to be so open and so vulnerable about this experience because I know that I'm not the only one that is experiencing this at their job. Like, that's the saddest reality of this whole thing is like the way that I was feeling is not just me. Like, I wish so badly.
Our companies. I know it's not at our companies.
I know. I wish so badly that I could just like help everybody get out of this. Like, I really want to be able to do that for other people. But I mean, ultimately, like, it is something has to shift within yourself to be like, I don't deserve to be treated like this. I am getting a check, I guess, but like at what cost, you know? Like, I'm able to pay my bills, but at what cost? Because I'm paying rent, but I'm barely living. Like, yeah. I'm barely experiencing the joys of like, you know, living in New York. Like, I pay a lot of money to live in New York and I'm sitting on my couch every day crying because I'm depressed and feel bad for myself. That's no way to live. Like, you know, so how did I rebuild? Well, the first 2 weeks I cried a lot.
And I cried and cried and cried.
Yeah.
You love a good cry.
I'm not a real like crier. I'm not somebody who like feels brought to tears a lot. Like, it really takes a lot for me to feel emotional enough to, you know, cry. And I will say this job did that to me a lot. So that should be
the floodgates open too.
You're I just know. Like, and you know what's so funny is like, now that I've like felt so emotional in like the last year, like going through all this and whatever, like I cry all the time now. Like, I went and saw a movie at the movie theater and it wasn't even a sad movie and I cried. Like, I was just like so heartwarmed by what even was happening. I'm like, wow, like I love feeling emotions.
That's
like,
how I so am fun. Now. Once I started it, and honestly, I think it was my job. Once I started crying because my job, I swear I cried everything.
Yeah. So, okay. So bringing it back to the beginning of February, the day that I quit, February 1st, when I put in my notice, I told all my friends, I was like, February 1st is the day. They planned this like so, they're so fucking nice. It's crazy. Like, I just, I love my friends so much, but they planned this like happy hour for me. And they were like my quitting party, because they knew like how hard everything had been on me. And like, they had been telling me like, you can do this. Like, we support you. Like, everything's going to be okay. And like, I had told my parents, I was like, listen, this situation has gotten to the point of like no return. There's no fixing this. I think that I probably just need to quit. And like, after I got the blessing of my parents to be an unemployed person, I was like, wow. Like, I don't need anybody else's approval. Like, if my parents think this is cool, then
that's like the only blessing you ever need in your life.
I'm a 26-year-old person. I have not lived with my parents or, you know, relied on my parents.
Nothing changes.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, yeah, but if they think it's cool, then like, it's cool. So anyway, so I did this little happy hour and it made me sad. And so I wound up sleeping at my friend's house, having a sleepover and just crying myself to sleep. And
you love adult sleepovers.
I know. And I needed it. I needed it really bad. Once I got over the emotional turmoil of it all and like I had a grasp on reality of what actually was going to happen. I realized that I didn't want to go back to work immediately. Like I thought I did. I really was so worn down and felt so terrible about myself that there wasn't going to be a time in the near future that I felt good enough about myself to sit down in an interview and say, I'm good at this, this, and this. I didn't feel confident saying that because for the last year, I had been told, you're bad at this, you're bad at this, you're bad at this. We don't even really like you that much. And I kind of put all like LinkedIn, all that stuff. I get like email blasts from them and I muted them. I was like, I can't think about this right now. I can't, I just need to focus on like rebuilding my emotional
you had
stability.
Everything sucked out of you. Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Well, and burnout too, when you're constantly trying to prove yourself, you're taking on more work, but you're also every word you say is analyzed by yourself.
Yeah.
And so the burnout and the research on burnout, and I'd love to talk more about like the research about burnout, but I mean, it has very real physical, your rash probably partially was from burnout.
Yeah.
It has very real effects on your ability to your mental ability and your mental state. And then your physical state as well. Like you start from ground zero, you need to rebuild.
Totally. And so, yeah, rebuilding for me looked a lot like, meditation was really big for me. I was really able to deepen my practice during this time. That was so helpful of just like sitting down for like, 10 minutes a day and just like kind of gauging what I was feeling in that exact moment and being able to kind of log that in a way that, I never did that before. And, throwing myself into like more physical activities, like I started doing yoga and things like that, mostly providing care for other people was a way for me to feel better about myself, because I think in a way, like it's transactional, but because the other person actually does need you or, wants what you're able to provide, it feels good, like no matter what. And so I became like a very much like stay at home GF. Like I was like all those TikTok girlies that are like, they have like a high corporate BF and they're just doing their little things. But yeah, I cooked breakfast, lunch, and dinner for Noah. Like I took care of all the house stuff. Like I was really in my like homemaking phase for
okay. Let me also clarify. She also was in her DIY era and was building like massive reconstruction on her apartment. So it's not just like you were like sweeping. You were massive, huge projects that people would never dream of.
Yeah, I turned my apartment into somewhere that like I can see myself living for a very long time. Like I just
alone is such a big piece.
I wanted to pour my attention and energy into things that made me feel good. Like I was sharpening skills. I was doing things just for the pleasure of it. There was no real reason other than I wanted to. And,
which up until now, you never let
had
yourself
the chance.
Have that opportunity. I mean,
yeah, totally. I mean, I've always been working for 40 plus hours a week, and
before that college and high school. And
yeah, it's tough taking care of yourself. It's a full-time job. I mean, I do it every week now, you know what I mean? It really, it's crazy. Once you have the time, you really do fill it. Like I was so worried about that. I was like, what the hell am I going to do all day? Like, and I did watch a lot of Shameless and like, I watch a lot of shows.
Nothing wrong with that.
I know. And so I just like started doing little things around the house and it turned into like tearing down walls and repainting everything and whatever. But yeah, it was really enjoyable. And I finally was feeling like inspiration and like creative again. And like, I was feeling joy for the first time in a very long time. I was able to provide like,
well, and feeling a utility for yourself again, seeing that when someone else has been telling you that you can't do anything for years and years,
I was like,
you're
watch
like,
me.
yes, I can. And,
yeah.
and it starts with the little things. It ends to, you know, maybe it ends to tearing down walls and rebuilding
Yeah.
completely.
I know.
But you
My
start rebuilding that sense of confidence.
every time my superintendent, he lives in my building, and every time he comes in here, he's like, so what projects have you been working on? Like, what do you have going on? And he's like,
Honestly, he must
so
love it.
no, he does. He's like,
It's free labor.
it looks like Fifth Avenue in here. It's so nice. And I'm like, thank you. Like, it makes my day. Like, I'm obsessed. So, yeah, I mean, up until like, you know, the rash stayed for probably 6 weeks. Like, my skin really, my face didn't look like my face until like the middle of March, probably. It took a really long time. And even still, like, I can see scarring. Like, it's definitely like it was a permanent shift, you know, and in the way that I saw myself. But it was also kind of like a marker of like, okay, so my skin is starting to feel better. Like, my skin is starting to look better, and I'm also kind of starting to feel better. And it was kind of like this way of like tracking like the
Yeah.
end of it all. I don't know how to explain that in a way that doesn't sound so cheesy, but
No, I think that makes perfect sense.
yeah. And so yeah, I don't know. The weeks just started going and going, and I had been doing this prior to quitting my job because just I'm just a hustler. Like, I am just somebody who loves to just take on little projects that yeah, I don't know why. But anyways, I started doing Rover, and I'm a cat sitter full time. That's my thing now. And
Which in New York City
yeah, I
takes a
mean,
lot of money.
it's kind of crazy because I like joke about this all the time, but I'm making now almost the same amount of money as I was making at my full-time job that I needed a college degree to do, just cat sitting. So it's kind of crazy. But yeah, it's been really nice. And it, you know, I did that for probably 3.5 months, like consecutively, not thinking about like maybe, you know, when will I jump back into the workforce, whatever. And right about at the 4 month mark, probably like right around 2 months ago, you know, I was like, I'm kind of ready to have like a stable something. I wasn't sure like if I wanted to be in the same field. I wasn't sure if I wanted to work in an office. Like, I had no idea. I just knew that like some sort of like consistent working environment would probably be like a good fit for me at this point, because with Rover, I work most of the time 7 days a week. So it is a lot. Luckily, it is a very flexible schedule. Like, I make my own schedule, and I choose the gigs that I want to take. So it's not
Yeah,
like,
I'm not at all sponsored, but we are both the biggest proponents for it.
yeah,
I am
I
currently dog
actually
sitting.
I randomly, like, you know, because I'll like take videos and like post them on my Instagram or whatever, and I'll be like, these are my clients for the day or whatever. And people are always like, you should make this like a TikTok, like you should make a TikTok, or like you should like make this content or whatever, because people love it. And I was like, oh, like, okay, like it doesn't seem that interesting to me, but I did. I don't know if you follow me on TikTok, but I kind of blew up like randomly. I had like one TikTok get
Go
like
off, brag.
32,000 views, like 3,000 likes. I'm like, why, how? I don't know how the algorithm got me,
People
but
love animals.
it was really
The
crazy. And
algorithm
people,
loves animals.
it's so true. And people were like, oh my God, like, I live in New York. I live near you. Like, can you watch my cat for me? I'm like, yeah, like, you know, it's so funny. Or people would be like, oh, like, Sammy's my favorite, or I love Queen, or like, this is my dream life. And I'm like, wow, people care about what I'm doing. Like, that's so crazy. And to hear like people saying such positive things about my work and like the things that I was doing, because I would consider Rover my job. Like,
Yeah.
it's not, you know what I mean? I feel like when I first started it, I was like, oh yeah, this is just like a side thing. Like, it's not a big deal, whatever. But like the way that it's been able to sustain me, and like the relationships that I've built with you know, my clients and stuff. It's kind of incredible. And yeah, so I would consider it my job. It's kind of crazy. Because obviously when I graduated from UVA, I didn't expect this to be my reality.
No, but I swear I network for dog sitting and dog walking like the way I would for a job.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, people ask me questions about it all the time. Like, it's really awesome. I get to set my own rates. I get to set my own hours. My clients leave me really good reviews and refer me to their friends. And my net has been cast really wide. And so I've been really lucky.
Well, and I think so much traction coming from such a, like, an abusive and toxic relationship with your work, moving to something where you have control and you are getting positive feedback and you have control over your schedule and your life and your rates, and you are put in a position of power when you were diminished so low.
Right.
It seems so corny and cheesy because it's like, when you really think about it, you're like, okay, I'm just pet sitting. That's just pet sitting.
Right.
But you are controlling it. You are having a say in your path right now. And that's something that you didn't experience. And that's part of that rebuilding, whatever it is, if it's Rover, if it's like whatever you want to do, if you want to start a podcast, like what I'm doing, like, you're getting a say and you're giving yourself back that autonomy that was completely stripped from you. And just realizing that, like, I'm not what they were telling me. And that alone, and figuring that out, is such a breakthrough.
Right. That is such a good way of putting it. Because it really has been kind of like a rebuilding and like a rediscovering who I am and like what my desires are and all of these things, you know, like I kind of like reestablished my like perception of self in a lot of ways. Like, who am I outside of my job? You know, I feel like I put a lot of weight on my career to carry my identity in a way. And I think a lot of people do this. And I think, you know, where we went to school doesn't really help that. I think that like being put in such a, you know, prestigious school to go out and, you know, most of the kids that we went to school with were guaranteed a job because they went to UVA. You know what I mean? So it's very much the reality of like, my identity is not tied to the way that I make money. My identity is tied to my interests and my likes and the way I treat people and like my friends and like I don't know. I really have had to reshape my entire self-worth and self-identity to remove that whole part of so much of who I thought I was, you know?
Yeah.
And that's been kind of beautiful. Like, I feel really lucky.
I'm so proud of you, because that's something that, especially like starting to learn that even at 26, like at our age, mid-20s, I mean, that's something that people usually don't get until much later in life. And I think that's something in my research too, with these generational differences, is thank God. I mean, that's becoming much more of a big point of contention, is this life work-life balance. And the Gen Z, thank God, are promoting like, work is work and life is life. And sometimes they coexist and sometimes they don't. And that they don't need to be your whole life. Whereas like my parents, I mean, I joke, my parents have failed retirement about 18 times. Like they never actually retire because they're so tied to their work. And it's so important to who they are. And like you were saying, and something that is a very common theme that I'm going to talk about a lot in this podcast is these labels. And work is one of the biggest labels, because you go from schooling and then work becomes a new weird label too, where like college kind of was too, where it's the next step in your life, but it's also, so for so many people, a way of establishing prestige. And once you kind of break free from that and you're like, who cares? You know, work, however you're going to make money, like we need money to live. Okay. However you're going to make money to do it, whatever, as long as you're like surrounded by the people that you care about, as long as you are finding and you're being honest and genuine to yourself, that's really all that should matter. And unfortunately, it's not for a lot of people. And so that's why I think like your story is so inspiring, because you technically got it all. You know, like you hit the, rose through the ranks, working for what on the out front seems like this incredible, all like so female, progressive company. And it was hell. And then now what people might look at is they're saying like, oh, well, you quit, and you could sit there and accept that bullshit, or you could say, no, but look at all this other stuff that I'm doing, and I'm happy, and I'm not having these literal physical reactions to the amount of strain that I put my body and my mind in, and I'm doing so much better for it. Who's winning now? Like, honestly, who's winning now? And I think that's something that I want my listeners to hear is, you can find a way out of that shitty job and find happiness. And it just might take a little bit more of an unconventional route, but it doesn't mean that it's not there.
Yeah. It's been a very, it's been really beautiful finding what brings me joy as an adult. And just sitting in the silence and sitting in the stillness for a while and just kind of seeing like where my mind goes in a way. I appreciate you saying all those positive things about it. It's,
I'm personally very proud.
I feel that way. I feel very proud of myself in ways that I really never thought that I would feel about quitting a job. Like, I don't know, going from shame to like gratefulness and like gratitude and joy and positivity has been kind of like, I've run the gamut of emotions this year. This was my year of emotional growth. So
next year
yeah,
we're gonna breathe.
I know, so true. But like, I don't know, it's kind of crazy. I like I said, I just never expected this to be the path, and I feel in a way very grateful that it was. Because I think it came at the exact right time.
Yeah.
So.
Well, Marissa, I want to thank you endlessly for coming on and sharing your story. I think it is, you know, obviously I shared that I experienced some of it in a bit of a different way, but I think this is sadly so common. And I think a lot of people are probably in this situation and don't even know that they're in this situation, or are trying to convince themselves that they're not. Or maybe they're too scared to make that jump or take that step to leave a really bad situation. And I really hope that anyone who hears this sees that there's light at the end of the tunnel. Like you can be happy. You can take that step. And I cannot thank you enough for sharing your story, because I think it will inspire so many people.
Thank you so much for having me. This was really beautiful. I'm so happy to be here. I wish I could give you a little hug.
I know. We'll do virtual hugs.
I know.
But with that being said, thank you guys all for listening. Thank you again to Marissa. And make sure to follow on Instagram at Not So Nice Girl Pod and on TikTok at Not So Nice Girl Pod, and rate and review. It helps a lot. All right. Bye, guys.
Bye.